Session number 11486, Rule 2.
Do you remember hearing about Kristallnacht?
Upsets me always. I don't suppose I shall ever come to terms with that. Yes, I do. I do remember the Kristallnacht. I don't actually quite know which year it was, 36 or 37. I remember going to school and seeing it. And it was on the way to school, and one simply, I suppose, just went by. It was the story, of course, at the time that was told was that a German ambassador in Paris had been killed by a Jew, and that this was a revenge the people had taken on the Jews in Germany, which we all knew wasn't a fact. But that's the way it was presented. And I think, I can't remember the exact date, but I think that after that time, those Jewish families actually left the town. I remember one elderly Jew sweeping his glass. From here, I was walking home from school on the other side of the road. Child, I don't know what I could have done, but nonetheless, I saw it, and I remember him doing it on the other side of the road, and sort of thinking the old man oughtn't to sweep it, and I really ought to help him, but nonetheless, being afraid and not doing it, and knowing there was a sweat if I did it, that I would be in some nasty way punished or beaten up, so I didn't. But it's a sort of memory that's simply there. And one lives this. I mean, that was quite a small thing. After that, I suppose there weren't many Jews. They then left the town. My mother took some food to a Jewish family. She left it outside the door, because one wasn't allowed to enter their premises. And then they all disappeared. And one didn't really know. One knew something dreadful was happening to them. Absolutely no idea the extent of what was happening. And then one finally heard it, of course, all after the end of the war. My aunt, who lived in Hamburg, in a district where there were a lot more Jews because Hamburg is a trading town, she did her bit to help the local Jews, and she saw them all disappear more so because there were more. She felt it more than perhaps we did because there were more to go. She also had Jewish friends who went abroad but they could, so they were saved. I suppose a lot of Jews went to America. Jewish wives of friends of ours, or acquaintances rather, went to America. Or one took cyanide or something rather than be transported somewhere. So that, yes, I think one noticed, one knew, and didn't know any details. And that in a dictatorship is perfectly possible. You are completely cut off. And I could even believe if a concentration camp was 10 miles away, perfectly possible not to have actually known what went on.
Do you think many German children felt as you did about it? You know, clearly you were very upset with what was going on. Were you exceptional, or do you think there were quite a few people? Did you ever talk about it to your friends or family?
One talked about being anti-Hitler quite a lot. I don't think one talked that much about the Jewish problem, because in our town it wasn't that obvious. I think that's true to say. But being anti-Hitler, of course, meant that you would feel pity for Jewish people. I had never thought of them as anything separate. They were simply Germans. And they then were something different. And I think that what a lot of Jewish people, of course, felt. They had never thought of them separate, because, in fact, they had integrated completely. A lot of them, in fact, the Christian Jews, of course, which didn't in any way help them, because Hitler made it, after all, a complete racial issue.
You were saying that you belong to the Hitler Youth.
Yes.
You know, was pressure applied on children? You know, did you have to belong to the Hitler Youth?
Well, if you wanted to go through school and do Abitur and go to university, you would have to have been a member. There's no doubt about it. And if, as a child, I suppose you couldn't refuse, I think your parents would have been in an enormous amount of trouble. So with that, you became a member. And, of course, actually, it wasn't such a threatening thing. The things we did, when I come to think of it, weren't so frightful. One did a lot of... one did some camping and a lot of singing and a lot of... I can't think of the German... of the English word. One made things with one's hands... handicrafts. One did a lot of handicraft. There was indoctrination, which was extremely feeble, because our so-called leaders tended to be intellectually not of a high caliber, so we just used to sit and poke fun at them. We did some marching. We did a lot of sport. I remember once a punishment march where I had to march all by myself on a sort of parade ground as a punishment, which I did, and to the great enjoyment of all my girlfriends and boyfriends. It was there. One had to go once or twice a week for an hour. One thought that was a frightful bore. If you didn't go, you had to have an apology from your mother written or something. So one found, of course, reasons not to go. As one got older, one used to go to the pictures with a boyfriend and hope one wasn't found out and people lied for you and all this sort of thing. But in some ways, it wasn't that different from going to the Boy Scouts or Girl Guides or whatever it is, really. One had to wear a uniform, which one did. It was a blue skirt and a white blouse and a tie and a leather thing. I've forgotten what it's called. And Knoten. I've forgotten the English word.
I think toggle.
Yes. And a brown jacket. I don't forget now whether I had a brown jacket. I suppose this is going on a bit. There was less of it as when war came and it progressed. People were otherwise occupied. I think there's a lot of always changes in schooling. I think there was, at one stage, we didn't go to school anymore on Saturday morning, but we had to go to the Hitler Youth instead. And everybody, parents and teachers, obviously complained. And then that was stopped again, and we went, not, I don't think, because they complained, but because it was deemed not to be a good thing after all, and we went back to school. I suppose it probably started with the war, but I can't really remember that particular detail.
Was there any sort of particular attitude to women? You know, you would have been a young girl still.
Mm-hmm.
But can you remember, sort of in the Hitler Youth, one reads sort of stories about the Nazi attitude to women, and, you know, the mother of the family, the sort of ultra feminine view.
Do you, when you look back, was this fostered at all in the Hitler Youth?
No. Thinking back in the Hitler Youth, it wasn't fostered. But then we were... You went to your Hitler Youth meeting, geographically speaking, where you lived, you belonged to the group. And as we lived in a very good area, so all the people living there would be well educated, or the children would all be at my school, which was a gymnasium type school. And one wasn't that influenced, and one was educated. So the woman just motherhood, although that was always proclaimed as the ultimate, it wasn't. There wasn't much propaganda for that, not really, not in earnest to us. I think we would have laughed as well. We never really suffered from that, although the general attitude was taught it, and I think you got a medal if you produced more than a certain number of children. But I can't remember being impressed by it or feeling that it was expected of me. It was perfectly acceptable to go to a gymnasium and go to university for a woman, no question. That's what one wanted to do, and that was acceptable.
How about your father, you know, during the period from sort of 36 onwards? He was a member of the National Socialist Party.
Yes.
And presumably maintained that membership.
Oh, yes.
Yes. But did, you know, what was he, did his attitude change towards the party, would you say, in that
Yes,
time?
I think it changed very early on. I think when he first voted, the promises were full employment. And Germany had, I believe, 9 or 10 million unemployed at that time. It was an enormous problem. And some national pride again, which I think probably appealed to men more than women. And so Hitler was voted into power. But when the realities then emerged, the beginnings of the dictatorship, that the other parties weren't allowed, that one was not allowed to say certain things, that one had to toe the line in every respect, a lot of bureaucracy emerged, and little party bosses locally threw their weight about. I think that emerged very soon. My father's attitude gradually changed. Not that we discussed that much as such, that there's been a change, but there was a change, because my parents were quite in agreement about it all. He didn't stop us going to the Hitler Youth. I mean, he couldn't, well, as far as I can see, he couldn't really do it without endangering his own position entirely. He, having been or having joined the party, you couldn't leave. That would be quite unthinkable. He paid his dues. I never remember him going to any meetings. I think it was just a question of paying your subscriptions, really. And working in heavy industry, they were very busy. Industry, of course, prospered during that time, because after all, the armament race began, although the works my father worked for did make no armaments at all, but nonetheless bridges and railways and boilers and turbines and all these things were then needed if you rearmed, so they all prospered.
Was there any sort of talk or feeling about communism in your area? You know, did this crop up at all in your young mind?
Well, only when we moved from a bit outside the town into the town, into an enormous flat. That was at a road junction, and there was a pub not that far away, which I believe had been rather a communist centre. And during the time when Hitler came into power, 32, 33, there was definitely fighting there. And that I heard as a child, we did close our windows, and we didn't go out, and we were scared. But personally speaking, I was scared because men were fighting. I didn't really know the causes. But the brown shirts fought the communists there until 1933, when, of course, the communists, in effect, were defeated. There must have been a fair number of communists. I can't say that I knew any or that it was much discussed.
Was there any fear of communism?
No. See, when I was conscious of what might happen to the country, of course, communists had been defeated. I believe they were put into camps. The odd one, of course, communists came back and lived and worked, having been in a camp. They didn't talk about what they experienced there, but there were one or two people one knew of who'd been to a camp. No. No, there wasn't any real fear, except that, generally speaking, politically in his speeches, Russia was the arch enemy and was described as such, and the hordes from the east in those terms.
What did you think when you heard that the Russians had signed a pact, or the Germans had signed a pact with the Russians?
We were astonished. We didn't think for a moment there would be any real friendship or love lost there, that it was simply a way of covering the back, as it were, whilst there would be fighting on the west. By that time, after all, one pretty sure that there would be war, and the war would be on the west against France, and it wasn't to be on two fronts, and therefore a pact had been made with Russia. Rather recently, just now, in fact, as I was at home, I looked at a scrapbook my sister has with the picture of the signing and Ribbentrop standing there and Stalin smiling his enigmatic smile, and what was written underneath, that the pact has been signed. There wasn't much said in defence of the Russians, actually.
Yes, we're now coming into the war period, obviously, aren't we? You were saying about Hitler's speeches, how you used to listen to them. Did you get the BBC at all?
Oh, yes. My mother was an avid listener to the BBC, which, of course, was strictly forbidden. So you just about had it on that you could just about barely listen. The transmission wasn't that marvellous anyway. I mean, radio technique hadn't developed as it has now. And my mother listened quite regularly. They were, of course, in German, broadcast to the German people. And I remember her listening most certainly during the 1938, the various crises we had there, the Czech crisis, etc. During that time, it was forbidden. And I dare say my parents would have been officially told to go before some party people and justified or say why they had been listening. During the war, there was almost death penalty on it for it. It was much stricter. Yes, they listened. I suppose we had a wireless, as I said, from about 36 onwards. I can remember them doing so in 38, and we listened as well. And there was obviously the danger that you made a remark the next day, things you could only have heard on the British broadcasting. It came from Dulwich, I think, the broadcast. Hugh Fraser was one man. I remember him being mentioned. Yes, we did.
The Munich meetings between Chamberlain and Hitler, did you hear about those? And I wonder what you thought. You know, did you think that there would be peace? You know, did you anticipate war?
Well,
eventually?
We all wanted peace, and therefore one hoped there would be peace. And one thought Chamberlain coming was wonderful. And there was a lot of publicity in all the newspapers. The picture that I've seen since in England, him landing there and waving his hat, all that we had in our papers. And of course, Mussolini came and Daladier from France to München. And yes, we heard it and we followed it and we heaved a sigh of relief and hoped it would work. But I suppose at the back of one's mind, or my parents' mind, I was still too young, there was always that fear that once that was finished, the next demand would come, which indeed, of course, it did. Then, when I think München was when the Sudetenland, which is the area around Czechoslovakia, came to Germany officially, because there is a mixed population, no doubt. And then I believe the next spring, actually, we marched into Czechoslovakia and took the whole country over. And I think people then knew that there would be no peace, really. And we seemed to lurch from one crisis into the next. Yes, that's right, that must have been in March 39. München, I believe, was in the autumn of 38, and then that was March 39. And then... Yes, and we were on holiday when the agreement was signed with the Russians. We were staggered, and we came home, and we already had rationing before war was actually declared. I remember my father was alone at home. The three women, we'd gone on a fortnight's holiday, and he hadn't done any buying of food. So we came to an empty house, and my mother always maintained that set her back all through the war, because we started from a very low ebb, as it were, food-wise. But of course, the rationing was perfectly adequate at that time.
Were there any shortages before rationing? You know, one hears of the policy guns before butter in Germany towards the late 30s. Were you aware of, or would it have been taken as normal, I suppose, for a child?
Yes, there was that talk, but in fact there weren't any shortages. I think life was simpler altogether, and we had a very big garden, and we had fruits and vegetables from the garden, and in those days one had local and seasonal food much more. We used to have bananas at Christmas and at no other time, and oranges, and one had the fruits and vegetables of the season, so life altogether was simpler. And as far as I remember, there weren't any shortages at all. Our life was very pleasant in that respect. We had it, well, my father, I presume, earned quite well, and we had a living in Maid, which was normal for middle-class people. And in fact, of course, financially, I suppose, on the whole, Germany was looking up. When I think of the life we had, we didn't have a car. That was not usual. We had someone came to help in the garden. We had a woman who came to do the washing. And we had a living in maid. And that was, a lot of friends had that. So life at that stage was, socially speaking, extremely pleasant, really.
When war came, and I suppose, you know, it would have been the Polish events, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Can you remember that, you know, when the 1st of September, and what was actually, what you understood of the situation?
Oh, yes, well, by that time, I think one was politically... much aware. I was then 13, that's right, coming on for 14. I followed politics at that stage. Well, we came back from holiday. Rationing had already been introduced, clothing coupons and ration cards, so we knew war would come. And then we simply had on the wireless the announcement of the troops having marched into Poland. Needlessly, it was said that there had been an attack from Polish side, which we were repelling, which we didn't believe. And I think Hitler made a speech, but really I couldn't say because there were so many. I suppose what one was really then waiting for and very much afraid of, how France and England would react to that. And they had said that they would stand by Poland, and there were, for 2 days, quite a lot of negotiations, and every time a plane landed somewhere, one hoped that things would be righted in some way or other. And then, of course, they weren't. And on the 3rd of December, England and France together declared war, and it was a Sunday, and we had, it was very amusing, the custom is to buy cake on Sunday for Sunday afternoon coffee, which is at 4 o'clock, and one did this, and there was an aeroplane, and it was said to be an English aeroplane overhead, and to this day, I don't know whether it was or whether it was the German one, but if it was one, it was only someone dropping leaflets. I mean, obviously, no bomb. But when everybody was absolutely terrified and scared and think if it's already starting, well, of course, it was absolutely, it was nothing. I don't know whether it was even an English aeroplane. And that then stopped, really. And the Polish campaign, of course, was so fast. It was fast, I remember, about 3 weeks or something like that. It had all been presumably well planned. Hitler was favoured by good weather, so nothing was swampy in Poland, which is always a danger in those countries. And it was all over. And what is in England called the phony war started. It was a sort of lull in Germany as well. One didn't notice that much that there was a war. Yes, one was rationed, but it was all quite enough. Obviously, some people had, there'd been casualties, but we didn't know anybody who has. There probably weren't very many. One was very far away from Poland, so one didn't know what was going on there. One feared the worst, but one didn't know. It's except that we had, that the army having that had fought in Poland was moved to the west, obviously in preparation for the Western campaign, and we had soldiers billeted on us, which was, looking back, a very jolly affair. They were nice young men, sort of in their early 20s. Well, we had one who was really like a son at home in our house, very friendly. It was the ordinary army, so they were just German boys who were there who'd been fighting. They all seemed to have a sense of humour. I remember they had to do some exercising, and the German children on the way, this must have been November, December, throwing snowballs at the sergeant major, which of course absolutely delighted the troops. And he used to have to polish his boots, and our domestic help washed his uniform. I think she had an eye on him. And he spent Christmas with us, and they were there for a few months and then went again. So that was just a sort of quite a amusing interlude. School went on, because we were still obviously very much at school at the time.